Twitch. Run, I say! Run!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. How are you today? Coming to you from a soon-to-be windy southwest Florida. Guess we got a little storm on the way, so we shall see. It'll be interesting to see what happens. The whole of the peninsula of Florida is in the cone right now, as are we. As we go on the air today, it looks like the thing, according to the forecast, is going to go just a little bit, possibly a little bit east of us. I'm not sure. And who knows at this point. So tomorrow morning about this time, I think we'll know which way it's going to go. So we'll get prepared. We'll get a little gas for the generator and, plenty of peanut butter and crackers and all that sort of thing put away. Make sure we're ready to withstand a few days, some water and all that. It seems like the infrastructure in southwest Florida is, at least the electrical grids is pathetic. Every time there's a slight wind, a little bit of lightning, the electric goes off here. Never seen anything like it. Lived up north all my life before moving here about 10 or 11 years ago, and I don't think in the little area I was from, I don't think the electric went off in 10 years, not once, but here it goes off just about every afternoon, so I don't know. We'll see. Glad to have you along with us this afternoon. An eventful day, a one-year anniversary, I guess you say. I hate to use that word. We're not celebrating it. I guess we're marking it or commemorating it, whatever the case may be. And the show will mostly be about Katrina today. We'll be happy to have you join us in the conversation. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Just about forgot to turn the phones on there, so we got them on now. We're going to have a couple of guests with us. One we've had with us before, but she's been back to New Orleans several times since we've had her on, and it'll be interesting to talk to her again. And we're going to have Shalene Espinoza on. She wrote a book about called "The Eye Through the Eye of the Storm," and she's the one. It was the, if you'll remember, the lady pioneer aviator, really U-2 spy pilot, and she was an embedded war correspondent, and she spent considerable time volunteering and helping down in the Gulf Coast area, but we'll be having her on. And coming up at 3:30, I guess it is, Neil DeMoz of FAIR.org, and he too is going to be talking about a big article he wrote about Katrina. Today's the day to remember the folks down there. I mean, every day is the day to remember them, but they deserve our love and our admiration and our respect and so very much more help. Please today and this week and always remember the eyes you saw in that storm a year ago this week, the closed eyes of the dead, the vacant eyes of the people wading in that filthy water up to and even above their waist, the frightened eyes of the people standing on their roofs and begging for help, the desperate eyes of the people standing on the streets begging for food and water. Where are those eyes now, and why has their country let them down for so long? So many of them have been let down for an entire year now with no help or very little help whatsoever coming. And we intend to talk about that today, just about the whole day. And we hope you'll favor us with your comments about the situation. How many of you saw the speech Mr. Bush made down there today? Who is he kidding? I watched quite a little bit of it, all I could stand, let's say. Here's a man standing there trying to take credit for whatever has happened in New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. Actually, there's been some progress, to be sure. Nowhere near the progress that there should have been by now. And I think the federal government is largely responsible for that. Oh, to be sure, Ray Nagin is certainly nothing to write home about. And the governor of New Orleans isn't exactly in line to become the next leader of the Democratic Party either. But FEMA, you know, where were they during this whole thing? It was a massive, massive failure. Really, when it comes down to it, Katrina was the inevitable failure in the wake of Bush's conservatism's success. Really, it's an observation that Democrats still desperately need to make clearly and unabashedly, and they don't need to shut up about it. They need to proclaim it loud and long. It's moments like Katrina when you need a party in power that actually believes in the affirmative power of the government to help its citizens. That's what the government's there for, to help its citizens, rather than the party that sees the government's role as protecting the property of the well-off from the underclass. And that's the way they saw it there. You saw one time after another evidence of that. It's when the true ugly soul of American conservatism is borne out for what it is, and it's a realization of selfishness and the hysterical denial of community. They hate that word, community. America's got to see what happens when the government is staffed by people appointed to their jobs precisely for and because of the disdain they have for the whole notion of policy and the public interest. It wasn't pretty. Take a good look at the news, and especially you Republicans, take a good look at the news. Take a long look, because at no real risk to yourself, which you know is just how you like it, you have been given a great and a rare gift for which others have paid a terrible price. In New Orleans, you've been given a glimpse into the future of your deepest wet dream in many, many of your cases. This is the government you really want. The poor, too bad. I guess they'll just have to die. This was the government of Grover Norquist in action, the one he wanted to drown in the bathtub. You remember? Well, if you take a close look and a close observation of what happened in the aftermath of Katrina, one would have realized that certainly FEMA had been drowned in the bathtub, along with the rest of our government. But neoconservative theory has run headlong into reality, I think, at long last. And let me tell you, the theory is wrong, folks. The authorities, right before your eyes, sacrifice the lives of your fellow Americans. And it might seem harsh to say so, but that's exactly what happened. They did sacrifice the lives of your fellow Americans on the altar of their vile social programming theory. Better for people to die than give help. Give them an inch and they'll take a mile. That's exactly what they were saying. This is your government. This is the logical outcome of all that neocon, Cheney, Rove, management theory bullshit that's hypnotized the American voting public for the past decade. And for the rabid dog evangelicals like Falwell and Robertson, this was the hell on earth. It's also obvious that there's one huge dominant factor that's been operating over decades to culminate right now in the Gulf Coast problems and many others. They're the Republican Party, the party of know-nothings, incompetence, greed, bigotry, religious intolerance, and irresponsibility. We now have the government that they've wanted. That's what they've wanted all along. They have it now, and that we allowed them to have it. We did. I feel some hope that this catastrophe will bring to light the need for an efficient, a compassionate, a progressive government that 2006, this coming November, will restore us to congressional leadership. But after seeing the level of incompetence and the pitiful token efforts of the Bush administration along the Gulf Coast, I'm, like so many of you, full of despair that the illumination has come once again on the backs of the poor and the destitute. We didn't see the rich people drowning in New Orleans. There are those who are born blind. There are those who are born deaf. But in many cases, the blind and the deaf see and hear reality on a much clearer level than so many of us who have perfect vision and hearing. And I'm hoping the rest of us can rise to that level concerning the tragedy that is our government right now and the terrible mismanagement that took place after Katrina. I'm dreaming that there are millions of people fed up with this administration, that finally millions of people on both the left and the right are fed up with their lack of leadership. And I'm dreaming that millions of people want to put a stop to our country's downward spiral. Who would have dreamed that we would, a year ago, look on our TV sets and see what we saw on the Gulf Coast? To be sure, we can't wrestle with Mother Nature. There's not a lot we can do about it. But so much of that could have been prevented. On a local level, on the state level, and most assuredly on the federal level, there were screw-ups from top to bottom. And who would have guessed that we ever could have seen the scene that we did see on TV here in the United States of America? We've always been the country that's been looked up to. If anything terrible happened in the world, it was our doorbell that was rang first. Come and help us. We need help. We know you can help. We know you can help us prevent this disaster or make it better. And here we had one fomenting right here in our own country, in an important city, in a wonderful city, a historical city. And what did we do about it? So very little, when it mattered so very much. If sin is defined as a deliberate and a wanton violation of God's laws and teachings, whatever God you might believe in, then the neglect of the people of the Gulf Coast is absolutely worse than a sin. It's a crime against humanity. And we should all feel ashamed of our country today. One year later, and there's still a tremendous about to be completely ashamed of in the Gulf Coast. JonBenet Ramsey, story number one today on the news. Everything has stopped for the past, week, 10 days, I forget how long now. Carnage taking place all across this globe. Iraq, Afghanistan. And the story of one sexual pervert leads the news day in and day out. I'm not saying it wasn't an important story, but as we've reported on this show before, that very year of 1996, there were 792 little kids under the age of 9 years old murdered. But the only one reached the headline, a pretty little white girl. But it's not a story that should have overtaken the Katrina story, the Iraq story, the Afghanistan story, all the other stories. Our media is just out of control. Maybe our media is giving us what the American public wants. And if this is what the American public wants, then I'm ashamed of the American public. We need to be more responsible. And it's nice that so many of us sit back and say, yes, we're Democrats, we feel we should do this. We feel should we do that. But we've let this happen. We've allowed these neocons to take over the government. We've allowed these neocons to take over our media. We haven't worked hard enough. And so I would like to take this opportunity at this one-year commemoration of the Katrina tragedy and coming up soon to be 9/11 tragedy to say that we need to redouble our efforts, all of us, to take this country back from this group who has allowed us to descend into this literal hell on earth for our nation right now. Let's go to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Our media.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the Guy James Show.
Oh, Guy, Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
I didn't hear you right off there. You know what this is? It's a criminal neglect. I've watched the Animal Planet show on TV and seen people taken off in handcuffs for treating animals. And the way that those people were treated in New Orleans, and besides Brown losing his job, and nobody else, nothing has been done to anybody else. It's just unbelievable. I blame the American people more than anybody, because they're the ones that put this guy in office. And a lot of that's a blowback to them. The thing about it is, the majority of those people didn't vote for this guy.
Yeah, that's very true. And you know, Bill, and I'm sure we'll comment about it several times during this program today, I plan on. Some of this is by design. New Orleans was a red city. A blue city. And
that's right.
It's not blue anymore. And there's a lot of people, and it might sound very cynical, but there's a lot of people that hope that many of those folks never come back to that city.
Oh, they probably won't be able to. They won't be able to afford to. What have they got to come back to? And there's not been any help for them.
No, and I hear Ray Nagin. I mean, maybe want to throw my shoe through the TV. I heard Ray Nagin last night, whom I have no respect for whatsoever. I wanted to throw my shoe through the TV, and I heard him bragging about how they were going to build a Trump Tower in New Orleans. Well, yahoo! What yeah. about the people down at the 9th Precinct? How about not a damn one of them been able to move back into a structure, because there it sits exactly the way it was a year ago today?
How can anybody else in this country have any faith in this government? I mean, if this election coming up isn't just an absolute landslide and these people were thrown out of office, then I don't know what to tell you, Guy. I think it'd be time for you to fold up shop.
If they don't respond if the voters don't respond this time coming up, I don't think there's any hope. I really don't think there is.
Yeah, because I mean, what else would turn them? If they let all this just go by the wayside and say, well, you know, that's not me. I mean, this could happen. I can give you any number of scenarios where this could happen in different parts of the country.
Oh, absolutely. And there's probably no worse place that it could have happened than to New Orleans. But, any other. I mean, there's bad sections of every big city. But New Orleans, my God, this was a tragedy. I have to think any place else they'd have been having a meaningful effort on getting things fixed by now.
You know, Guy, I was just reading where they're cutting by 50% for brain injuries suffered by the troops over in Iraq. They're cutting that from 14 million to 7 million. None of these people have any conscience? I mean,
obviously not.
Where's the American people where they see what's going on? I mean, they should have seen it last time. How they won these elections in 2004, I don't know.
Well, it's time, Bill, for all of us to take a good look before we go vote this time. And I don't know what you do about it, because it's time for us to realize that 99.9% of them, the first and only thing they've got in mind is keeping that seat of theirs in the Congress of the United States.
Well, listen, I'm going to let you go so you can have other callers.
Hey, I did want to ask you about one thing. I see that the Toledo Blade's having union trouble up there, the newspaper for all the rest of you folks in Toledo.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Trying to bust the union.
The unions are a thing of the past, and they figure now's the time to take and, you know, bust them and get rid of them.
Yep.
It used to be, I mean, look when back in the 60s and 70s when you had, what was it, probably about 55, 60% unions. I mean, unions were so strong, and you can thank Reagan for all that.
Oh, especially in a town like Toledo.
Yeah, a strong union town.
Very much
Marcy
so.
Marcy Kaptur, there's a great one for you.
Is the Jeep plant still going there?
Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah, the Jeep plant's going good.
Okay, DeVilbiss?
DeVilbiss? No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, it's been a while. Hey, thanks for your call, Bill.
Okay, listen, you got a great show going.
Thanks, good to hear from you.
Thank you, Guy.
Ah, yes. Boy, towns like Toledo, Ohio, and Dayton, and Youngstown, Ohio, and Pittsburgh, and all through the Rust Belt up there. Man, the unions are taking it on the chin, that's for sure. Let's go back to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, this is Sarge.
Hi, Sarge.
How you doing?
Well, I'm good. Good to hear from you today.
I'm going
to
give you an update if you want it.
Sure.
Okay, we live on there?
Yes.
Okay. This is the anniversary, and Haley Barber has put out talking points about what is going on in Mississippi. And I posted them on my site at powersandmorrison.com. And if you want to see a bunch of lies and a bunch of trash, go see them. The man is saying he's going to make a tourist mecca, which the plans he has laid down, Guy, are just totally absurd. There is no way they can be realistic. The story is this. We have people who are handicapped in flood areas, in FEMA trailers that are stinking and reeking of formaldehyde. We have people trying to commit suicide at record pace. We have very little progress done. I'd say there's not even 15% progress. Haley Barber is down on the coast today, and he's waving the flag of, look how much we are doing. They aren't doing anything, Guy. It is a total failure.
Well, I haven't seen any. You know, I defy any of them to show us any great strides that have been taken in that whole area down there. I can't see any big progress from anywhere.
The only progress I have seen, Guy, is the casinos are up and running.
Oh, well, sure. Yeah.
And the way they do the FEMA trailers, Guy, is the more politically connected you are, the better trailer you get. If you have no connections, you get the formaldehyde cardboard box type. And it's just, you cannot afford to live down there. My sister told me, she lives in Jackson County, and she told me that they have the water companies and one of the water companies that are going to triple their rates to pay for the damage that Katrina has done to their system.
Well, then I saw the big electric company in the New Orleans area. They're planning on I forget just what the financial details are now, but they're claiming they might have to file bankruptcy after putting all the profits in another division's pocket.
Well, I don't see how, Guy, because my electricity bill tripled, and I live in Marion County, so we got hit real, real hard, but we're basically recovered. We're just paying for it now.
Now, where do you live in relation to Biloxi?
I live 85 miles from Gulfport.
From Gulfport, which direction?
Right, I'm 85 miles from the Gulf.
Okay.
I'm due north of New Orleans.
Okay.
And north. When Katrina came in, we were pounded from 7:30 in the morning until late at night.
So how far is that from, like, Hattiesburg?
Hattiesburg's 30 miles to the west.
Okay.
I mean, to the east, I'm sorry.
To the east. All right, I got you. Now I know where you're at.
In fact, I went to school at the University of Southern Mississippi.
I spent a year there one night.
I love USF, but I'm gonna tell you, don't let these people kid you. What Barber has been doing, I was fortunate enough to be part of this, but they tried to kick people out of three Section 8 housing projects in Gulfport and Pascagoula. I found out about it. I called WLOX-TV, and they said, there's nothing can be done about it. I said, hide and watch. I called FEMA. I called Lott. I called everybody. Of course, Lott didn't even answer. But I called everybody, and finally I got a hold of someone and stopped it. They said, they cannot do that. We never gave those orders. And they were blaming HUD for it. They never gave those orders. It was Barber trying to kick people out of their house so he can clear this land to sell for condominiums and for all of these big class tourist stuff.
Sure, that's what's going to happen. They're going to try and make a an Epcot Center type thing out of New Orleans. You wait and see downtown.
That's exactly what's happening here too. And if you want proof of it, all you got to go do is read those talking points, because he spells it out, and the poor people are just SOL.
Well, Sarge, it's like any other disaster that ever happens in the world. Even the Depression, other terrible disasters. There's always vultures waiting in the wings to feast on what's left.
Guy, I told the people down in Jackson County, I said, you're not going to get help from the right. Don't even think the right wingers are going to help you. And I have been proven true.
They don't believe in that.
The only hope for us is liberals.
They absolutely don't believe in that. You help yourself, buddy. You're on your own. Big government. That's not what we're here for. We're here to, you know, they've got a totally different view of it than the people on the left.
Well, I'm gonna let you go, guy. I appreciate
Sarge. Thanks for calling. I appreciate your input, especially from being from that area.
Thank you.
Ah, yes. It's true. You watch and see. You watch and see. I don't know if we'll live long enough to see it, but New Orleans is going to take on a completely different complexion. It most certainly will. They will do everything they possibly can to keep, bulldoze that ninth precinct and build it into something upscale. That's you think the flavor and the culture of New Orleans will ever be back? I don't think so. I hate to say that because, God knows New Orleans had its problems and always will. But man, you talk about a town where you can go enjoy some culture and the flavor of it. I mean, that was it. And I don't think it's going to come back. I haven't been there since this happened, but I hear even Bourbon Street is although it wasn't devastated by the floods or anything, I've heard it's just a shadow of what it was before. Lots of the places still not even open. The tourism isn't what it was. They don't have the hotels. They don't have – there's so much that's not there yet. The infrastructure, it's going to take a long, long time. But here's my question for you. Have you seen a massive cleanup effort? Have you seen a massive effort by the United States government, other than Bush, on saying, we allotted this much money, yada, yada, yada? Have you seen a massive effort, any kind of urgency to getting New Orleans and the whole Gulf Coast area put back together? The answer is no, hell no, because it's not a priority. That is not what it is for these people. Yeah, I don't know if Trent Lott's got his home repaired yet or not. I rather imagine he's making progress on it, maybe a little better progress than your average person down there. I think his home was in Pascagoula. Interesting place, Pascagoula. You go across all those wetlands. You take a big, long, raised highway across all those wetlands going across there, heading west on I-10 in Pascagoula. You see it way down there to the south of I-10. Interesting area. We're going to pause for a break right now. We're going to get a hold of our first guest of the day, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere.
By the rivers of Babylon, we sat and wept when we thought of home so far away. On the branches of the willow trees, we hung our harps and hid our hearts from the enemy. And the men that surrounded us made demands that we clap our hands and sing. Please.
Welcome back, everybody, from the break. Glad you're along with us here on the Guy James Show. Glad to have you. And as we announced early on at the beginning of the program today that we are going to be talking almost exclusively. I see we got a phone problem here. I'm going to get back in touch with our guest on another line. Hang on just a minute, everybody. We'll be back in a moment. Now we're back. Yeah, one of those little gremlins in the phone lines today. Sounds like I still got phone trouble. I don't know what it is. Maybe it'll go away here. We'll turn the gain up on this a little bit. Neil, are you with us?
I'm here. Can you hear
me? Okay, yeah. There we go. These phones have this automatic gain. Well, I won't go into it. Anyway, it'd take me longer than we have to explain it all, and I'm not sure I do myself. Folks, as promised, we got Neil DeMoss with us, and he's with fair.org, and has written quite a long and comprehensive. If you want to read the whole thing on fair.org. Are you hearing all that interference?
Not me.
Not me. Okay, good. Well, it's just me then, and that's a good thing. We're taking the whole day today to kind of commemorate and mark Boy, I'm getting a tremendous amount of feedback here. I hope I can get this straightened out. Just so it's not bothering you.
Not bothering me at all.
Okay. We're spending the whole day on Katrina today, and we found your most excellent article, a very comprehensive article, and I encourage everybody to read it at fair.org by Neil DeMoss. Especially opening up here, you were talking about on your article there about Jack Cafferty talking about there's a great big elephant in the living room, and the media seemed content to ignore it. And Neil, it's true. For how long, right after that thing happened, was the media completely content that, well, nothing happened and looks like we're okay for a while?
Yeah, it was funny. The first couple of days, it seemed like, of course, at first everyone, well, not everyone in New Orleans, but everyone out in the greater country thought that New Orleans had dodged a bullet. And then as things started to come in, I guess it was really when the pictures from the convention center started to come in that people started to realize the, sort of enormity of the situation down there, and that the media discussion started to turn from, the specifics of the problems of the Superdome, or how come these people didn't get out of town, to, oh gosh, we really have, thousands and thousands of families here who, didn't have cars and didn't have the ability to get out of town, and not what does this mean, what does this mean for, Katrina and the response to that, but also, what does this mean for us as a country that no one seems to have thought about the fact or realized the fact that, there are people in this country who, if you say to them, hey, there's a storm coming, get out of town, don't necessarily have the resources to do that. And, you had people like Jack Cafferty and people on, all the cable news channels suddenly, who you wouldn't necessarily expect to, suddenly waking up and saying, gosh, we have poverty in this country. This is a real problem. How come we didn't realize this before? We're going to sure pay attention to it now. And, as I found as I researched all the coverage over the last year, that commitment lasted anywhere from a few days to at most a couple of months. But, it certainly did not carry forward as much as people are promising.
Well, it is incomprehensible to a lot of folks, and I know people like that just can't conceive of somebody not having, $50 or whatever it would take to get a ride out of town. Right here where we live, we're going to have a storm tomorrow, the way it looks, and there are people supposed to evacuate that I know don't have the money for gasoline for their car. And to get out of town, and where would they go anyway? And I don't think a lot of people realize, just as it was in New Orleans, it is here. It's the end of the month. A lot of people don't have their government checks yet, their Social Security, and they're flat broke eating beans until they get their check. And all of a sudden, America seemed to wake up to this problem.
Yeah, I think that there's, such a degree of segregation in this country, not just in terms of race, but in terms of class as well. There are a lot of people out there in, whatever you call mainstream middle-class America who just don't think about the idea of, oh, gosh, people can't just, grab their credit card and go and rent a car, and it's something that I've seen, way before Katrina over, the past, 10 years or however long I've been covering poverty issues, that, when you look at something like the welfare debate, just the huge disconnect between the sort of theoretical conversations that are going on in in Washington and state legislatures around, we've got to get people to work, and then the way it actually plays in down at the ground level for the actual people who are like, oh, we have to go to work, well, that would be nice if we could find somebody to do childcare for us, if we could find some way to deal with our sick relative or whatever. And I think this is a huge problem in this country that both the media and the policymakers, really have no clue what life is like for, a good 15, 20, 25% of the nation.
Well, and although we were making some significant progress on poverty for several years, isn't it headed the other way again?
Yes, there's in fact a new census report just out today showing that that poverty went. I think the poverty level overall stayed about even from last year, but it's gone up consistently since 2001. It's the first time that in a quote unquote recovery, you've actually seen the poverty rate going up. And one of the concerns is not just that overall there are more people living below the poverty line, but poverty is deepening in that the people who are poor are much poorer. And this is not something that you hear discussed on the daily news.
Well, isn't it true also that possibly that that some of the reason that people are noticing this problem a little bit more, that we're having people join the ranks of the poverty from, let's say, the middle class that have never been there before?
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's what it's going to take is, you know, for people to become poor who aren't supposed to be poor. I remember a few years ago when Barbara Ehrenreich came out with her great book, Nickel and Dimed, you know, which is about her going and trying to live on a, you know, a waitress's salary or a maid's salary. You know, my first thought was, geez, do we really need Barbara Ehrenreich to show that it's hard to be poor in this country? But I think for a lot of people, that is necessary. They really do need to hear, oh, you know, it's not just, you know, these few lazy people, or it's not just, you know, these people who have problems. It's that for anyone, if you took them and, you know, plunked them down in, you know, minimum wage or close to it job, there is just, you know, given the lack of support, given the lack of, you know, affordable health insurance, given the lack of affordable housing, you know, it's darn impossible to make ends meet in this country unless you're, you know, making a whole bunch of money.
Well, and probably nowhere that I can think of in the nation, maybe I know you've studied it a lot more than I have, there's probably no place that actually would show where the poverty would be out in the open any more than it was in New Orleans, especially like down in the 9th Precinct area and all. That's a very, very poor area. That entire area is virtually gone from New Orleans now, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely uninhabited except for, you know, a couple little diehards here and there.
And the population of it virtually all dispersed to other parts of the country.
Right, they're in Houston, they're in Baton Rouge, they're in Atlanta. They're, you know, in these FEMA camps that are getting set up, you know, around Louisiana where the media isn't allowed to go.
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to ask. How many of these people are in that area, you know, that in a relatively close area, that are planning on coming back? Of course, they cannot now. And how many, what's the percentage of people that will never come back?
I don't think we know, and I think this is a huge issue that's really been missed in the mainstream media. You know, there have been a bunch of reports saying, well, you know, we thought that the population was going to start coming back by now, but it looks like it's settling in at around, I think they're saying, under 200,000 people. One report I saw said that New Orleans is now at the population it was at in 1880.
Oh.
And, you know, there's a bunch of questions. Are people not coming back because they've settled in their new homes? Are they not coming back because the insurance money hasn't started flowing yet? Are they not coming back because they're, you know, in Houston and can't figure a way to afford to get their whole family back to New Orleans, even if they did have a place to stay? There have been a few stories on the fact that, you know, as you might imagine, with a lot of the housing stock destroyed, rents are just absolutely soaring in New Orleans for the people who are there.
And full.
And full, no, absolutely, because there's no place for people to stay. So it's, you know, a huge topic that I think has been touched on by, again, some of the papers in that area. You know, I think the New Orleans Times-Picayune has done a fantastic job. Houston Chronicle's had some good stuff, Baton Rouge Advocate. But, you know, I have not seen, even in the, you know, anniversary coverage we've had the last few days, I haven't really seen a good analysis of, you know, why are people not going back? And, you know, it's not that hard. You find them and you ask them.
Yes, yes. Well, what about these camps that have been set up, these so-called trailer FEMA camps around that you can't get into now? How long is the government planning on having those there?
You know, I think my guess is that they don't know themselves. But you know, if they do, they certainly aren't saying. It's again just remarkable that this sort of thing has gone on, and if not for a couple of intrepid reporters from the Baton Rouge Advocate, we apparently wouldn't know about the degree to which this is happening.
We still have some of that here in the Southwest Florida area. Just a little bit north of where I live, there's still some FEMA trailer camps, and they're trying very hard to push people out of them now after a year since Wilma last year. But the devastation was nowhere near. And you know, that's a story that kind of bothers me too. I hear the Florida officials and a lot of Florida people say, especially people on the right, say, "Well, hey, we picked ourselves up after Wilma here, and yeah, we had the trailers for a little while and all, but you know, we're rebuilding, we're doing this, that, and everything." You know, you can't compare what happened here at Wilma in no way, shape, or form. Although it was bad, it was nothing like the Katrina disaster up in the Gulf Coast up there.
Well, at least there's something to return to. Although, you know, there, as you say, there were certainly enough people who were put out of their houses and displaced. I have relatives who were put out of their houses and displaced by Wilma. So, you know, and I think, again, you saw the same sort of thing. And the Florida papers did a good job overall of covering Wilma's impact on, you know, the needy in Florida. But the further you got away, the more it was just, oh, you know, a hurricane came through, here's some devastation, and now, you know, next week we're on to, you know, whatever, you know, the celebrities of the week, Brangelina, are doing.
Yes, yes. It's up to the media, and I don't know, I was discussing that a little earlier in the program today. I don't know what you have to do to literally kick the media in the rear and say, hey, guys, there's a monstrous story here to cover that's not being covered at all. The lack of progress in the Gulf Coast area. And am I wrong? Is the progress nowhere near what anyone should expect it to be?
Oh, I think it's, you know, it's completely dragging, and I think there's, you know, a whole bunch of reasons. There's a whole bunch of different fingers you could point, you know? You could talk about you know, poverty of the region going in. You can certainly talk about the FEMA response. You can talk about the foot dragging on clearing up federal money. You can talk about the way that the mayor has handled things. And I have seen some of that, again, in the anniversary coverage. I have seen some of the sort of, you know, critiques of, you know, how has this been managed. But in terms of the promise that was made a year ago, which was not just, you know, we're going to make sure that we pay attention to how the government handle things from here on out, but it was, we're going to try and figure out how we got to this point of where, you know, you had, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands of people who did not have the resources to follow a simple evacuation order. That is something that the media has really dropped the ball on. And, you know, you were mentioning earlier that you said that you know, it was incredibly obvious in New Orleans, you know, more than anywhere it should have been, that you had this sort of entrenched poverty. But, you know, I went to New Orleans a few years ago, and did I go anywhere near the Ninth Ward? No.
No.
You know, and I'm sure most reporters and editors and people, even people who are well-meaning, you know, if they had gone to New Orleans, they went to the French Quarter, and they went to, you know, downtown, and maybe they made a couple little trips into some neighborhood or other. But, you know, going actually out across the canal into the lower Ninth Ward, you know, again, we're talking about a really amazing degree of segregation and almost like mental segregation from the rest of society that goes on with poor communities. And I think until you break that down, until you get to the point where, you know, reporters and politicians have to pay attention to these people, until you get to that point, it's going to be very difficult to do anything constructive to solve this.
What's the answer? I mean, we Americans are so good at, you know, we've got so many problems going, monstrous problems now for America. You know, we've got the war in Iraq, and we got people, you know, the problem with the government, everybody blaming the Muslims for everything now.
Yeah.
And we're so poor here in this country at getting at the root problems of things. We like to go at it from the top, but we never want to dig down deep and get at the root problem.
Well, I think that there is some promise in some of the bad news that we're seeing, you know, in that you know, Katrina, even if it didn't have a lasting impact on media coverage, I think it did wake up the public a little bit, you know, in terms of the people saw those faces on the screen, and, you know, maybe some people who hadn't realized what was going on did realize it. I think that you're starting to see people realize that welfare reform in, you know, 10 years ago did not solve the nation's poverty problems as it promised to. And I think that, you know, as we move along and we're, you know, we're not in the 90s economic boom anymore, and so we can't sort of paper over things with that, and that we're not in that the recession that followed, so we can't say, well, this is a temporary thing. As we move forward and we see that poverty is not going away, in fact, it's getting worse, I'm hopeful that that's at least an opportunity to open a dialogue about, okay, why isn't this happening? And, you know, I've heard about activists who are sort of trying to find ways to bridge the distance between, say, families on welfare and state legislators and get them into the same room at the same table so that, you know, even if they may not agree on what needs to be done, at least they can say to each other, okay, look, I'm hearing what you're saying, but here's my reality, and here's what you need to understand.
Yeah, yeah. What about you know, right after the problem started down there, right after the after, you know, the immediate aftermath, so many private groups started moving in, churches and philanthropic groups and so forth started moving in and giving a tremendous amount of help. Are many of those folks still able to be operating in the area, feeding people and so forth?
You know, I haven't heard the latest reports on what that is, on how those operations are going. You know, as last I heard, they still were doing that, and certainly folks were still going down there. I think that's another reason to have hope, certainly, is that, you know, you had a lot of people from across the country going down there and seeing the reality on the ground for themselves, which, you know, is it too big a stretch to compare it to, you know, folks from the North going down the civil rights movement and seeing the Deep South for themselves? I don't know.
Yeah.
But at least it's a way of getting around sort of the media silence, because people are going down there and are coming back and are reporting to their friends and, you know, bringing back photos and things like that. And I think that's hopeful, but we have a long ways to go.
How much of it is a federal government problem? What kind of an impact can the federal government have, or what should they have?
In terms of recovery in the Gulf Coast, or poverty,
yes,
or both?
Yes.
I think, you know, the federal government could, with a wave of its hand, you know, I don't know if make all these problems go away, but it could certainly, you know, alleviate them to a huge extent. You know, if the federal government just had not passed the Deficit Reduction Act earlier this year and taken effectively a whole bunch of money out of Medicaid and other social services and dumped it into tax cuts for mostly the rich,
yeah,
that alone would have been a huge step.
And I heard $71 million was taken off the Corps of Engineers for that area for levies this year as well.
Yeah, sure. I mean, no throwing money at the problem does not solve every problem. But the first thing you have to do, you know, in order to get anything done, is to have the money available, so that the services can be there, and so that the levees can get built, and you know, healthcare can be provided. I mean, you know, if the federal government would just put a few billion dollars, which sounds like a lot of money, but in the context of, say, the Iraq War, is not,
no,
into child care.
That's right.
You know, that would have a tremendous impact on millions of people's lives across the country.
For what we've spent on the Iraq War, many of our problems in this country could have been almost totally alleviated, I think.
Absolutely.
Neil, I want to thank you so much for being on the program, and I do want to encourage everybody to go to fair.org and read his entire column on this. What was the title of it? I didn't have the title down.
Gosh, you put me on the spot. I don't even remember
what
it was.
The guy doesn't know the title of his own.
Katrina's
Vanishing Victim.
Vanishing Victims. Vanishing.
All right. The title doesn't matter. The content is what matters, and it's an excellent article. And I do want to thank you so much for being on the program.
Anytime.
Neil DeMoss, thank you. Sorry about the phone problem there. I don't know exactly what that is, but anyway, I hope you could hear it okay. So much can be done in that area down there, and it is a problem that the media needs to stay at, but will they? How many more John Bonet Ramsey stories will come along? How many more, I see they arrested the the Mormon guy today that was wanted for, I don't know, what's he into, bigamy, plural marriage, all that sort of thing. Imagine that. On the FBI's 10 wanted list. And it gets headline news today. How many of you knew, our listeners know because you're very informed. But we've lost, 10 more soldiers in Iraq the past few days? And hundreds of Iraqis being killed? And yet this crazy car guy out in Boulder, Colorado gets the news. And the polygamist gets the news. And I tell you, our news coverage in this country leaves an awful lot to be desired. An awful lot to be desired. And I suppose it's our fault. What was it? I heard something or other about some award show that was on last night. I don't know what it was, for movies or TV awards or something. Oh, okay, yeah, the Emmys. Is that for movies or TV or I don't know. Had to push the old sneeze button there. Still having that little allergy deal. It's getting a little better today. A little better today. Went to the old doctor yesterday, for those of you. And thank you. Thank you for writing and asking about that and all your good advice and so forth. And went to the allergist yesterday, and he gave me, told me what the program I was on was all wrong, and trying something new. And today, yesterday, I didn't think it was working. Today, I'm thinking, well, it's much better today. So there you go. You know, we want to talk today about the recovery of the Gulf Coast, and I guess maybe that's a poor way to put it, because there really isn't any real recovery at the Gulf Coast as of yet. Last week, a Republican friend asked me to summarize the Democratic philosophy, and I made him go first, of course, because I knew he'd be an idiot, and he was. But my answer was easy. Democrats know that the government is here to serve the people, to protect the people, to work for the people, and to make people's lives better, and to help the people when they're in trouble, like this Katrina disaster, and to make sure the country doesn't fall apart, and so that the people can't function and go to work and be happy and survive, something we're all entitled to. The bottom line is this government has no thought for service, no care for our protection, no work ethic, no compassion, no long-range plan at all. No goal except their own wealth, their own happiness, and their own survival. And I think they've proven that over and over and over again. And today, this comes home to us in pictures. You're going to see them all day long on TV and film, in our memories. They can tell us not to remember that they let us down, that their most essential purpose was unimportant to them. But we remember anyway. And they can tell us that we should be afraid of people from the outside, but we're much more afraid of our own leaders. I don't know about you, but I am. And they can tell us that the terrorists will hurt us if they're not in charge, but the terrorists are hurting us right now in the destruction of our Constitution, our America, our purpose, and our center. We already have the terrorists in our midst, and we'll fight them here before we have to fight them elsewhere, and we are fighting them here, if you know what I mean. My thoughts and prayers are with all of those who lost loved ones and their homes and their irreplaceable possessions, and to a lot of them, they lost their country and their country. God help us all on that. There's so many people in the Gulf Coast region that have felt totally abandoned by the country. And I think it's up to all of us to let them know that we haven't forgotten. We haven't forgotten their terrible position that they're in, their sorrow, their misery that they still suffer every single day. It's so easy for us who don't live there to just kind of turn their eye the other way and look at something else. But folks, things are still terrible in the South Gulf Coast region, and we need to remember that. And by remembering that, we can help make things better. And we need to constantly bring an awareness to our government and, make sure that they're working on the problem. And so far, they haven't been doing a very doggone good job of it. So, I don't know. But Well, anyway, coming up in the next hour, we're gonna have Shirlene Espinoza with us, and she's a great guest, and she'll be coming up right after the news at the top of the hour. So do stay tuned for that. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Got Bruce Birch coming up a little later. Bob Kincaid after that. Lots of good entertainment here on the Head On Radio Network. Guy James Show, be right back after the news. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Quality News Network. New Orleans is marking today's one-year anniversary of Hurricane Katrina with moments of silence, speeches, bell ringing, religious services, and a visit from President Bush. Hurricane watches remain in effect for much of South Florida, where Tropical Storm Ernesto is due to make landfall sometime tonight, possibly as a Category 1 hurricane. Because of the storm, NASA is now moving the space shuttle Atlantis into its giant hangar at Cape Canaveral, a move which likely means there will be no launch at all for at least several weeks. Warnings have been posted for Mexico's Pacifica coast, which is threatened by Hurricane John. And in the Central Pacific, the entire Wake Island population, 200 military contractors, has been evacuated in advance of a typhoon expected to cover the island tomorrow. Iraqi police found 26 bodies in various parts of Baghdad today, men who showed signs of being tortured. Two more U.S. soldiers died yesterday in separate incidents, bringing to 10 the number killed in Iraq since Friday, and 2,624 the number killed since the war began. Dozens have been killed by an explosion in central Iraq, where people were collecting fuel that had leaked from an old pipeline. UN Secretary General Kofi Annan is urging Israel to lift its embargo of Lebanese ports and urging Hezbollah to return the two Israeli soldiers it kidnapped last month, triggering the 34-day war. Annan is visiting both southern Lebanon and Israel today. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is saying today that no one can prevent Tehran from pursuing a peaceful nuclear program. He is also challenging the authority of the UN Security Council and calling for a one-on-one televised debate with President Bush on world issues. The White House has dismissed the idea, describing it as a diversion. A hardline Kurdish militant group is claiming responsibility for yesterday's bomb in a Turkish resort area that killed three and wounded dozens. The group is vowing that there will be more attacks. A Navy lawyer has been charged with copying and transmitting secret information about Guantanamo Bay detainees to an unauthorized person. If convicted, he faces up to 36 years in prison. The USS Shiloh, a Navy ship capable of missile defense, has arrived in Japan. It's a symbolic first step in a joint U.S.-Japanese program to try and protect Japan and the region from missile attacks. The ship was deployed after North Korea conducted tests of its ICBMs on July 4th. Colorado authorities have dropped their case against the man who claimed that he killed JonBenet Ramsey 10 years ago after DNA tests eliminated him as a suspect. And Brazilian paleontologists say that fossilized fragments discovered there are those of a previously unknown giant dinosaur species that lived 80 million years ago. This is the Quality News Network.
In addition to producing and distributing the finest hourly newscasts in the country, the Quality News Network conducts interviews with 2006 candidates. We afford congressional and gubernatorial challengers of every political stripe the opportunity to illuminate their views and to demonstrate their character in a 20-minute network quality interview. We perform this public service to enable voters to get a better listen to the people they might consider electing to high office. Because as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. If you want to know more about who is running in the November elections, go to qualitynewsnetwork.com and click on 2006 candidates. If we are to get America back on track, we need to elect people who can lead us in the right direction. Now, back to the news.
U.S. consumer confidence fell this month to its lowest level in 9 months. Worries about the job market are being blamed. The FBI is investigating allegations that self-styled painter of light Thomas Kincaid defrauded investors. At least six former Kincaid Gallery owners have accused him of using their Christian faith to induce them to invest and then later ruining them financially. The Wall Street Journal reports that BP is being investigated by the federal government on whether it has manipulated crude oil and unleaded gasoline markets. Barnes & Noble says it's received a subpoena from New York's U.S. attorney and will cooperate with an SEC investigation into its stock option practices. Spiral Frog, a new advertising-supported music service, says it will offer customers of its no-cost web-based service the ability to legally download music by many of the world's most popular artists. The new service, expected to be launched later this year, could become another rival to Apple's iTunes Music Store. And after Tom Cruise's production company, fired earlier this month by Paramount, has signed a two-year development deal with a group headed by Washington Redskins owner Daniel Snyder. Gold is down $4 an ounce at this hour at $619.90. Light sweet crude is trading down 91 cents and is currently at $69.70 a barrel. All the markets are down this hour on Wall Street. The Dow down 52 at 11,350. NASDAQ down 14 at 2147. And the S&P 500 is down 6 at 1,296. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon on this, getting ready for a storm, Southwest Florida day. And we'll take it in stride, whatever it happens to be. We hope things will be okay for tomorrow's show. We hope anyway. And as promised right now, we have Sholene Espinoza on the phone. As you recall, we had Sholene on the program, maybe 3 months ago. I'm not sure exactly how long ago it was. A very interesting person. She's pioneer female aviator. She was a U-2 spy pilot. She was an embedded war correspondent. And I had the pleasure of meeting Sholene at the Take Back America conference here a couple of months ago. Sholene, are you with us?
Yes, I am. It's great to be on your show.
Well, thanks for coming back again. And had so many comments last time we were on the program, and so many people now have read your book, Through the Eye of the Storm. And by the way, folks, the proceeds from that book are going to the Katrina survivors. And a fabulous book, and as I mentioned before, it's one of those books that just literally grabs you, and you might be wanting to eat dinner and put it down. No, keep reading. Don't do that.
Oh, well, thank you.
it's just one of those books that kind of just drags you in, and I love that. John Dean's latest book is like that as well. Conservatives Without Conscience, and it's another one of those don't put down books, but. I wanted to have you back because I know that you've spent a great deal of time in the Katrina devastated area, and kind of wanted to talk to you today about progress or lack thereof and how things are going. I know you've made many trips there, and I know from earlier conversation today that you've been there fairly recently. How are things going in the region right now?
The biggest problem, which isn't exactly breaking news, is the housing crisis. Most of my time is spent in Mississippi, and I was just down there last month, and obviously people are still in the FEMA trailers for the most part. And really, this is everyone. You know, I've gotten into a couple of different arguments with people whether or not race has played a big issue in Katrina. But, you know, when you go down there, Guy, you realize that Katrina, certainly at least in the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, was colorblind. I mean, families are living in FEMA trailers still, and of course they're biting their nails and worrying as they're watching the storms out there over the Atlantic, Pacific, and as well as, you know, Ernesto heading that way. So really, the debris removal has improved a great deal, but in terms of people's lives themselves, they're still essentially living the same way they were 10 months ago.
What are lives like in these trailers? How big are these trailers? And just how, you know, have you got a family of four? Or how, you know, do they size them according to the family that's in need, or,
no.
or what?
No, that would be nice. Well, you've seen the little campers that are fifth wheel, basically, that are just, you know, you'll have a kitchen sort of eating area, and then you'll maybe have a sort of cab where you've got a bed, and then on the other end of it you might have another small sort of queen-size foam mattress, and that's basically it, with a very small bathroom with a little teeny shower. And, no, the whole family's living in there. I mean, sometimes people will put up a tent outside, and, you know, the kids will sleep out there if the weather's okay or if it's not too hot or too many bugs around. But for the most part, no, there's no difference. And not everybody has gotten a FEMA trailer. I mean, I met a woman a few months ago, and she's hopefully in one by now. She has an autistic grandson, and they're the only two surviving members of their family, and they're living in their car. So, you know, if your insurance didn't cover the damages because they got into this flood versus wind versus tidal surge, et cetera, controversy, then you're just essentially trying to wait till you get the savings or maybe a volunteer group to come down and help you rebuild. So that's why there's still a housing crisis.
Charlene, how does one live in their car with an autistic grandson or son?
I don't know, Guy. Every time I have her on a recorded CD and the Voices of Mississippi, we made a little CD to go with the book. Every time I hear it, I just can't, you know, I still just get tears in my eyes. I've written about her. I haven't gotten that article published, but and really, it's, you know, actually what the article is something that's definitely worthy of mentioning here, is particularly the seniors and the crisis that they're facing. You know, I'm 41 years old, and if this had happened to me and I'd lost all the equity in my home, assuming I still had a job, I could borrow money. I'm not really a credit risk. I've got, you know, at least 30 years to pay it back. But for someone that's, you know, the way it's supposed to work is you basically have your place paid off, and then you go into retirement, you live on a fixed income. Well, those folks are not really able to borrow money. And the disaster loans that have come down from the government, from the Small Business Administration, which also gives loans to individuals, the elderly folks are not being approved for those. So you've got a senior housing crisis looming as well.
Is any private money coming in? You know, I realized that right after Katrina happened, there were loads of private organizations went down to help out for one reason in one way or another. Are you still seeing a lot of that?
You see a tremendous amount of volunteer forces down there. And, in fact, that's been really the greatest you know, the greatest thing that's come out of Katrina is just that literally, I mean, I'm just one volunteer, but there have been tens of thousands that have poured in the Gulf. And a lot of these folks, they're sort of, I call them missionaries, because they're kind of like me, they keep going back down there. And without this sweat equity, they would be lost down in the Gulf. And what's so great about it is, I mean, you see people from all over the country, all kinds of religions, you know, Black people, white people, Vietnamese, Latino, you name it, coming down there to work together to try to rebuild these homes. You know, here's the issue is that there's literally hundreds of millions of dollars in the public sector that's been earmarked by Congress for housing, and Governor Barbour's still in Mississippi trying to get access to that money. He's just now sort of starting to get some of that to be able to give in the form of grants to his to the Mississippi citizens. And, I, you know, he's obviously very concerned about it, and he's been pushing hard, but, you know, he's fighting the red tape as much as anyone else. And then, of course, the other issue that really gets a burr under my saddle is that there are private organizations that have, take, for example, the Bush-Clinton-Katrina Fund. We sort of have a lot of laughs about that because, you know, I asked somebody at the Mississippi government, I said, you know, what's the secret password over there? I've applied four different ways to that grant and have not been able to even get a response. And they said, well, welcome to our world.
Well, who's running it?
Well, it's basically, you know, I mean, I don't know enough to sit here and throw stones. All I know is it took them about 4 months to get their 501 tax exempt status. It took us about 3 weeks for our community center in Mississippi, which we're going to break ground on in October, and we've actually raised over $730,000. So that's the good news, and we're giving that money away. We're going to spend it. But it seems that they're a little more process-oriented than they are outcome-oriented. I mean, they took in $100 million, and they've given out just a fraction of that. And you just got to ask yourself, what is going on? They have replaced the leadership there, so maybe they'll turn loose some of that money.
Well, most of them are lifelong bureaucrats, you know.
That's right. You know, and you know, in fairness, okay, I'm trying to look at this in an objective way. I'm saying, well, maybe they're worried that if, you know, there's some kind of malfeasance or this or that. But you know what, guy? I mean, if you go down there, they don't even have an office in the Gulf, for one thing. I mean, how can you dole out $100 million and not have someone on
right.
the ground? I don't understand that.
Right, and if a guy like Haley Barbour, as well-connected as he is, and he is certainly connected to the top, if he has trouble getting through red tape, my, oh, my, that is a problem. You'd think if anybody could get through red tape quickly, a guy like Haley Barbour could with his political connections. And if they're putting up roadblocks to him, gee, it's just too bad.
And, you know, the outcome of this or the impact, I guess, the byproduct is that it ends up costing a lot more money in the long run. As you know, being in Florida, if you've got some water damage to your home and you don't get after it right away, well, you're not going to have a home in a few weeks or months. And so as a result of these delays, we've spent about $70,000 per FEMA trailer by the time you talk, you know, about all the costs, when you could have built these homes, basically, or given people loans, and they would have gotten the work done themselves. So it's a tremendous prefab market in this country that can put up a beautiful home in a couple of days, and people need work, but we haven't been able to get the leadership to really take the initiative to do that.
Well, sure, and if you could do it on a volunteer basis with volunteer help, and I know a lot of volunteer help is available. Contractors and electricians and plumbers and so forth, you can build a pretty decent home, especially in that area, for $70,000 if you don't have a lot of labor in it.
That's right, and you see these groups will go down there and they'll basically gut and rebuild a house just in the 1 week, you know, a team of five people that, you know, assuming that they have the appropriate materials. And it's kind of funny, one of the little churches that we've been working with, the St. Paul United Methodist Church there in Pass Christian, they had pretty much left it for dead. You know, it had 14 feet of water in it, and it's a little country church, and no one was really particularly interested in saving this. Well, some volunteers came by and said, wait a minute, you know, this isn't right. We should save this church. And, in fact, they have totally transformed this entire church, that, you know, the one that I describe in the book of Through the Eye of the Storm. And it's basically just about ready, putting the finishing touches on it to be able to open back up. So, you know, it's kind of, it shows you the power of volunteerism, as well as, you know, the sort of, I kind of think of it as though, you know, well, you know, maybe man thought that church has had its last day, but, you know, some other power thought differently.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, what would they do there? Just, like, strip the drywall off? And, of course, it's probably on a cement slab and, what, steam everything down then and start over?
Yes. What they end up doing, if you get this kind of mold damage, is that they gut it. You know, they rip all that drywall out there. I've done that on one house. And then you treat the actual frame with a bleach mixture and dry it out with some drying machines, if you can get that, or just with the natural air, if you can't, for about 2 weeks, sort of let it cure, and then you just start back up. But if you can save the frame, and then, of course, you've got the foundation, then it goes relatively quickly.
Is water and electric available freely to these places that are being refurbished now?
Yes, that's the difference, really, honestly, Guy, between my experiences in Mississippi versus New Orleans. Mississippi, very clear, natural disaster, came in, wiped everybody out. Let's get this done. Let's work together. This was not anybody's fault. It was just, you know, a force of nature. And they have gotten to the credit of Governor Barbour and to the credit of the Mississippi Power Company. They've largely restored services to those areas. Some areas won't be rebuilt because it doesn't make sense. You know, these areas where they had so much water or the insurance is too high to reinsure, but they're rebuilding. Whereas New Orleans, they're still sort of in the mentality, well, this was a man-made disaster, which it was largely, pointing fingers, and they haven't really decided responsibly what is going to be rebuilt and what won't based on the strength of the levees. So huge swaths of New Orleans has no power, no water, and no real chance of any kind of rebuilding. Even if you came in and did your work yourself, you couldn't live in your previous home.
Well, on a personal note, what's your day like when you go down there to volunteer for a week or so, or however long you go?
What I've ended up doing is all my time is spent trying to build this education center. And, in fact, it's going to, you know, I had bought this piece of land, 5.2 acres. It's on high ground. It's within a half a mile of the school there that's now educating K through 12 in FEMA trailers, the DeLille Elementary School. And so all my time is spent meeting with various people, whether it's the government, the YMCA, the Boys Girls Club, and the various stakeholders, the builders, to get this done. Because obviously, I mean, if someone from the outside comes and says, "Well, this would be a great idea," but you don't have that local support from the mental health people, from the schools, then you don't have anything. So most of my time is spent doing that, and also, you know, visiting with people, building relationships, and the sort of way that I compare it, like I talk about in the book, the first 20 days after disaster is the emergency phase, times 10 is 200 is the relief phase, and times 10 of that 2,000 recovery. Well, we went down, we delivered supplies in that first 20, and then we provided relief by helping people with their SBA loan applications and FEMA applications and trying to find them individual assistance for 200 days, and now we're in that recovery long-term, what can we do? And, you know, it's funny, we've gotten into this swimming pool. I'm just so excited. It's a junior Olympic pool. There are no public swimming pools from basically Gulfport. There's a small one there, all the way to Louisiana state line, which is about 55 miles. And they believe that a lot of people would have been saved during Katrina had they known how to swim. So we believe it's not just a recreation function, but also a safety function. And people, boy, there's a lot of buzz about this pool coming in. So we're very excited about that, as well as an amphitheater, a little outdoor amphitheater and education center. But you'd be surprised at how much support, really. People are excited because at the end of the day, it's really about your kids, you know, and seeing them have a place to go after school that's not some FEMA trailer or some toxic sludge site from Katrina.
Oh, you must be so proud. Well, how's your completion date coming? Where are you on it?
We just submitted the plan to the Zoning Commission of Harrison County down there. They're very happy with it, making some minor modifications, and we hope to break ground in October. So we'll have the pool open in the spring, and we're hoping for a grant from Governor Barbour. You probably noticed I'm being very very positive about Governor Barbour's office here. We're hoping for a grant from him.
If I talk to him, I'll put in a good word for you there.
Yeah, please do that.
I, given my political persuasion, I doubt I'll be talking to Governor Barbour.
Well, it's funny, you know, it's like I said, you know, my partner, Ellen Ratner, he said, I had met Governor Barbour, and he said, "Ellen Ratner from talk radio," he said, "you know, she's not as liberal as people think she is." But I said, well, disasters make strange bedfellows.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. Ellen's been around the news business for a long, long time. And everybody recognizes Alan's name. That's
well,
for
it's
sure.
Like we say, you know, in flying, Guy, we say it's not who's right, it's what's right. And
yeah.
You know what? I believe that, you know, that it's not red state, blue state, or down there. It's really just about trying to get people, give them a hand up.
Well, Charlene, thanks for giving us the update. It's good to hear some positive things coming from out of there. It's a whole different story where you're at from where it is over in New Orleans right now. And it's good to hear some positive stories, and good luck with your project. And we'll check back with you in a few months and see how it's going.
Definitely. I'd love to, and it's always a privilege to be on your show, Guy.
Thanks, Charlene.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Charlene Espinoza, and if you get a chance to read her book, beg, borrow, or steal it. Probably find it at your library, Through the Eye of the Storm. A doggone good book, and really is an inspiring story. A remarkable woman that you just heard talk. Really, I'm not given to superlatives about people. I'm not easily impressed. My dad always told me everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time, but once in a while you meet somebody that's got that glow, that aura, and Charlene has it. She's an amazing person, just an amazing person, and as you could tell, her bubbly personality, and she's one of those can-do type people. And you didn't hear very much negative about her, because it's just not from her, because that's just not the way she is. She looks at the problem through very optimistic eyes always. And I appreciate that very much from her, and I'm so glad to have had her on the program again today. Let's see where we're at. We're at 25 minutes after the hour. Hey, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Party or on a crowded street, silent singularity. When glances chance to mate, you looked into my glasses, said you'd seen a ghost. Tried my best to make you smile as we collapsed so close. I had been to Cleveland, you had been to jail. You seemed to be recovering, but I felt a little pale. Us was on 17th, above the hardware store. There we live with seven cats, all named for seven dwarves. But like leaves and kings, all things must fall. No diamond ring's gonna cut through it all. You were working as a grave robber, you could do your job at night. And I was living hand to mouth, just looking for a fight. The reason why we parted, it ain't that hard to find. I was always busy, and you never had the time. Well, the reason why we parted, it ain't that hard to see. But I was never sure if I left you or you left me. But like leaves and kings, all things must fall. No diamond ring is gonna cut through it all. All over, I lost myself in work. You got married to a lawyer painting murals in New York, and though it seems a million miles ago since I saw the light, yeah, I was flowed by nervously like warships in the night. And times I've been corrupted, but I've never been in love. And I began to realize that that's just where I was. So I packed up my possessions, caught an eastbound train. Met you in Ohio, sleeping in the rain. But like leaves and kings, all things must fall. No diamond ring's gonna cut through it all. So now we're going back again, to start where we began, with
love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hey, glad to have you back with us here for the last half hour of the program. Give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. Here we are in Southwest Florida, anxiously awaiting, oh, what is the name? Ernesto. Yeah, Ernesto is the name of that little storm heading this way tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Hope it isn't too bad. I don't think it will be. Right now, I think it's just a tropical storm. Since the show started, I haven't had a chance to take a look and see what the latest is. I should have had that all set up on the computer here so I could check that easily. But last I heard, it was, what, about 60 mile an hour winds and so forth. If that's all it is, why? Shucks, it'd be nothing. Anyway, we'll get the gas for the computer for the computer, the generator. got the old electrical box wired up to the computer generator, and so we do have electric in the whole house. When it goes out, run the computer, run the generator. You know, controversy goes around. Last year, a lot of people were out of electricity for a good long time around here. And I noticed in the newspaper, people started writing letters to the editor complaining that their neighbors had generators running all night and they couldn't sleep. That sounds like those without the generators that were doing the ones, they were the ones complaining. If you've got a refrigerator and a freezer full and all that sort of thing, and you want to have a fan running, not your air conditioner, but your fan running at night, you need to run a generator. So, always somebody to complain about something. But we hope it isn't too bad, and we hope we can be with you tomorrow. If we have any significant winds, I doubt we will be, but right now we're certainly planning on being there, being here tomorrow. Certainly hope so anyway, if it isn't too bad. The storm, if it takes a little bit of a left turn, why, we'll be right in the bullseye, and if it takes the right turn, why, we'll be a little bit off of it, but certainly we're going to get some effects for it, so looks like it's going to head up right up through the middle of Florida, evidently. Who knows? A lot could happen between today and tomorrow morning. It's funny for those of you that don't live in a hurricane area, and I never did until, 10, 11 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago, maybe. I forget what hurricane it was. Wilma was last year. It was one a couple of years ago, anyway. I forget the name of it. But Charlie. Yeah, that's what it was. It was Hurricane Charlie. And I had one window that I hadn't put the plywood up on yet. And Charlie was heading just slightly west of us here out in the Gulf. We live about a half a mile from the Gulf. And Charlie was supposed to be 4 or 5 miles out in the Gulf. And so we were going to get hit pretty good with it, and it was a Category 2, so we were worried, and there would be a storm surge and the whole thing. So I had one window to put the plywood back up yet, and we had the TV on, and, you know, it's the calm before the storm, and it is calm before the storm. And so I went out, it was on the front porch, and I took the plywood out, and right before I went outside, I checked on old Hurricane Charlie, and it was a Category 2, and... So I went out, and I don't know, I was out there, what, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, putting up more plywood, and I came back in. My wife says, hey, it's changed. It's coming at us, and it's a Category 4 now. And it was like, you know, in a matter of 20 minutes, it went from a 2 to a 4 and bent and came right at us. And at the last minute, it took a slightly left jog and went just north of us. We got some a lot of effects from it around here. Hopefully, thankfully, our home wasn't damaged at all. But there was huge damage around the whole area. But it's just funny with these things. Amazing how quickly they can change. And so that's why, even though, you know, I went to bed last night, I was what normally happens. You get ready for a hurricane. Here's what I do. I'm gonna let a little secret out. I hope all the local people aren't listening, because I don't want them to know my secret. But when a hurricane comes up, you don't want to even think about going to the grocery store like at 5 o'clock in the afternoon after work, or you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock in the evening. You don't even think about doing that, or buying water or batteries or all that sort of thing. Because the shelves will be empty, first of all, and you can't get near the stores. I mean, Home Depot... Lowe's, all the big plywood, you know, you don't want to think about it. So what I do is I'll go about like 3 o'clock in the morning, not to Lowe's or Home Depot, but they're not open, but I'll get up and I'll go into one of the all night stores, and there's nobody there 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And you know, I can just shop and just do whatever I want to do, get all the water I need, because by then the new trucks are coming in, the new shipments of water. Everybody that was there several hours before didn't get any. But I go at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I get everything I want, and I come home, and I'm all ready. See? There you go. I got it all figured out. So we got enough water at our household, and I think even here at the studio, I've got things stocked up fairly well. I've got some bottled water and all that. But back home, the Kukla the puppy has got plenty of dog food already. This is going to be Kukla's first hurricane. And, you know, I wonder what you think about things. A little 6-pound dog. And you look at, you know, and it's fun. It's really something. If you've never experienced a hurricane, this, I don't know why I got off on this subject. I guess because one's on the way. Last year, when it was Charlie coming, and that was right after Katrina, I think, if I got my dates right. You see these winds coming, and you know the old palm trees start bending over and over and over, and you're thinking, oh man, this is really bad. I've never seen wind like this. And you know, people's lawn chairs go flying by at 90 miles an hour, and you see all that stuff, and I'm thinking, you know, your eyes start getting pretty big around. You're like, whoa, this is nasty. And then it shifts into a whole nother gear, and then it's like, wow. But Mother Nature can be pretty severe, but it's pretty impressive to watch some of it, most certainly. Oh, my. Hey, you can give us a call if you got a good hurricane story. Give us a call on that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Glad to hear from you if you got a story about Katrina or hurricanes. And you know, we as we are marking the 1-year anniversary of Katrina, it remains a national shame. And in my humble opinion, history's going to judge it as Bush's Waterloo. And I didn't talk about politics too much with our last guest because she's not political, not at all. And so, you know, she does what she has to do to get along with everybody down on the Gulf Coast. And you don't dare get very political if you're going to do that. But I just think that it's Bush's Waterloo. Katrina was, and I, you know, he was our first MBA president, and he was dramatically shown to be hopelessly incapable of managing this, the storm, the war in Iraq, or any other major challenge. You know, think of it. What single management accomplishment on his part can you cite during the past 5 years? Give me anything. Give me anything. Anything the guy's done. Not only is the Gulf Coast a mess a year later, Bush is as well. And that's affecting us not only domestically, but in Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. It's all connected. The guy's been an unmitigated disaster at everything he's done. And I ask you, no matter you know, what side of the political fence you're on, call in and let me know something great Bush has done for America. Something really good that Bush has done for America. I just can't come up with anything. I really can't. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. Have you got something great you're going to tell me Bush did for us? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I did not. I never heard an answer. I just heard you in the middle of a sentence. This is Dave in California.
Hi, Dave.
Listening earlier, everybody, I guess, today is talking about Katrina a year later, but one message that did come out is Bush was asked, why is it going so much better in Mississippi than it is in New Orleans and recovering from the storm? And he said, things tend to go better when you're working with friends. Apparently, Mississippi is a red state.
Yeah, Haley Barbour, those guys are connected at the hip.
Well, that was his answer, is that things tend to go better when you're dealing with friends.
Isn't that awful? Isn't that just an awful thing? I mean, should that make any difference at all? Like, you got people drowning and dying and
yeah. And them sending away hospital ships and then sending away fresh water and saying, let them die, in effect, and that's the only way I can read it, you know. It was, let's see if we can't turn this blue area red. And I think they did everything they could to accomplish that. They should be taken out and certainly be in prison, all of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree. Geez. Yeah, it's a shame. You know, I did figure all along that Barbour would get more cooperation. Blanco, she didn't get any cooperation with him for a long time. And of course, I think too, you're talking apples and oranges between Mississippi and North Carolina. A whole two different complete sets of problems there.
Well, I think that if they wanted to, there could have been a great deal of help delivered to New Orleans, and they could have known in advance that the levees and canals wouldn't likely withstand a massive storm and maybe have built it up. It's almost like this is our way of dealing with this little blue problem that we have.
Yeah, and that's, I hate to be that cynical, and I know you do as well, but facts are facts. And you move 200,000 black folks that are 80 or 90% of them vote Democrat out of the city that always swings the state for Democrats. You've changed the political landscape of that entire state.
Mm. Somebody on the chat is disagreeing with us, but I'm convinced that they could have said, yes, hospital ship, we can use you. There's a lot of people suffering. Yes, truckloads of fresh water, we can use you. There's a lot of people without drinkable water, and they didn't. They sent them away. So I don't know how else to interpret that.
Yeah, well.
Anyway, your machine didn't answer. You did, and you answered in the middle of a sentence there.
Oh, well, I was talking, and I just saw the button starting to flash there. What happens is we've got six lines here, and there's a top row that's green, and when they start flashing, that means someone is calling right now, and they'll flash green for several rings, and then they'll turn orange, which means that it has answered. It stays green, but it stops flashing, and that means the machine has answered. But I answered your call right while it was flashing there, so.
Okay, well, it actually came on while you were in the middle of a sentence. But
yeah, I pushed it not while I was talking, so.
Okay. All right.
That's what you get when you get the one-man band here.
I do love your program. I listen every day that you're on. I don't call every day anymore, but I do listen every day.
Well, thanks, Dave. I appreciate that very much.
All right, bro.
Take care.
than you.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the chat room here. Seeing what's going on. People wanting to tell me what's going on with Ernesto there since I mentioned that. So they're sending us, Johnny O said they're sending us out of the airport early today to stay ahead of Ernesto. Let me see here. What else? We got anything on here? Well, I don't see. Yeah, okay. Someone let us know here. It says 13 moving at 13 miles an hour, 45 mile an hour winds right now. Probably won't be worse than a tropical storm. Shoot, I'm not going to worry much about it. I am going to get some gas for the generator, though. I think a thing takes about 5 or 6 gallons to run for 12, 14 hours, so I won't have to get very much. You know, it's funny. Another funny hurricane story. At the last hurricane, our power had been out for 2 or 3 days, and I had one of these deals where I had extension cords running every place, and I heard how you could wire up your generator to your electrical box and, you know, shut it off outside so you didn't get any backfeed and electrocute anybody and do all that. So I went down to the hardware store and got everything I need, and I saw the power guys. They had all amassed in this huge parking lot. I said, how long is it going to be until our electric gets back on? The guy said, well, where do you live? And I told him. He says, it's going to be about 2 weeks. So good. So I went home, and I got all this thing wired up, spent the money and, you know, the whole thing, got it wired up, had it on for 30 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. I had that generator running, and the power came on. Wouldn't you know? That's how it goes. Hey, okay, let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
Just wanted to say a little about Ernesto.
Yeah. What do you hear?
Well, it looks like it's going to go straight up through Florida, maybe go out to the east waters and then go on up to Carolina the way it is now.
Yeah, what do you think? Is it going to split the difference, like go right up right up over Lake Okeechobee that way? Or?
Well, it looks like it's coming up this far to us, which we're in the middle, you know.
Yeah, you're in the middle, and, well, Okeechobee's in the middle, too.
Okeechobee is lower than us.
Yeah, and I'm south of there and west of there. Okeechobee's about in the middle of the state. So,
go ahead.
Well, I'd say between east and west, Okeechobee splits the state right down the middle. So it'll be interesting to see which way it swings.
Yeah, and if it comes up through, land, it should be, not as strong.
Nah, it will.
It'll weaken, but. Did you know that day before yesterday that the governor announced that Florida was a disaster area?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Already now. And then I heard, him saying that needed 3 days' worth of supplies and all.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm one of those people, I'm not eating beans yet, but I do have some I can cook. And, I've been living on... past few days living on change because we're still working on our roof.
Oh yeah.
But
you still have a blue.
No, we don't have a blue thing.
Okay.
No, it was mostly kind of steeped in,
Mm-hmm.
And the underpinnings.
Oh yeah.
The actual rooftop is all right.
Well, nothing a storm would help though.
No, right. But I'm just I'm thankful, and I'm just trusting God, because I don't have anywhere to go. I don't have any money to buy gas, and I don't have any credit card available. So we made it the couple of years ago through three. So
yeah, a lot of people forget that we had. I can't remember all of them that went through that year.
Yeah, we had three direct.
Yeah,
and then one closed.
You remember the name of any of those?
Charlie was one of them.
Charlie was one.
I can't remember the other one. It's been so many. There were so many that year.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like every 2 weeks, about the time we get our lights on, we turn around and
be
off again.
That's right. That's exactly what it was. It just and people don't understand in other parts of the country. It's not just the day of or the day before the hurricane. It's like a week before that things start changing, right?
Right now, it's very calm here.
But the stores start getting busy.
Businesses
start closing down and closing up their, you know, boarding up the windows. And the day of a hurricane that is supposed to hit, you will see this. It's like a ghost town.
But you described the way hurricanes are. You know, they will change. I've seen some of them do the loop de loops. You know.
Some
of them go around and up and down, up and around, and here, there, and everywhere. So you really, it's hard to say.
Yeah, you got to stay on your toes. I hope I'm not too far off. I haven't boarded up any windows today.
I hope so too. But anyway, you know, every place has got something.
Yeah. Earthquakes, tornadoes, you know. My brother was telling me, you know, he lives in Phoenix now, and he said no earthquakes, no tornadoes, no floods, no hurricanes. So
really?
Yeah, nothing there.
Well, good. Just hot.
Nothing except 115 degrees the first part of August, you know.
But no humidity, right?
No, not really.
Yeah. Well, I just hope everything is all right.
Well, we'll know about tomorrow this time, won't we?
I got tickled when I heard that the governor had, you know, announced the other day that this was a disaster area. The weatherman said, well, I don't know. He said, I don't know where it's going to go. You know, he said, it's hard to say right now. It was down below, you know, Cuba.
Yeah.
And,
well, it's in the Florida Straits, probably over about Key West about now, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm going to look up on that NOAA thing.
Yeah.
And it's got good maps and everything.
Yeah, and that AccuWeather's really good, too. That's really got good ones on there.
Yeah. Okay, and they probably come out with a new one like at 5 o'clock.
Well, it's going to hit us first and then you later. So
if
you find any of my stuff in your yard, you let me know.
What would it be?
I don't know, but
plywood?
I'll tell you a little story. Way back when, many, many years ago, when I lived in Ohio, and they had the famous tornado that hit Xenia, Ohio, which was an awful, awful thing.
I remember that.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I lived 60 miles away as the crow flies from Xenia. Mm-hmm. And the following morning, I looked. I had a big 5-acre lawn and everything. And the following morning, I saw all sorts of paper and debris out in my yard, and it was stuff from Xenia, 60 miles away. It got somehow gotten up in the air and come down. So I always found that to be interesting, but that was a terrible tragedy. Well,
tornadoes or something else.
Yeah. We'll know tomorrow, and good luck to you.
Right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Bye bye.
Good luck to you.
Bye. Bye. Yeah. Well, you know, we might get hit. We might not. We will see. Hope it doesn't take a left turn. You know, it's going to get somebody. But thank God it didn't have a chance to go through a whole bunch of Gulf Coast water, because the water here right now, I believe the water right off the Gulf here is 87. Eat your hearts out, everybody. I believe the Gulf water right now is 87 degrees right off our coast. So it gets up to 90 in the summer. Never, I don't think in the years we've lived here that I've seen it over 90. But usually 86, 87, 88 in the summertime, almost always right in there. And I think it's 87 right now. So that's when these things strengthen, when they get a good long time over that kind of water. Why? But they didn't this time. Cuba slowed it down, and interesting. Anyway, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. This is an unhappy anniversary of the New Orleans disaster. I make no apologies for the criticism I've leveled at the Bush administration. I took a long time today, and I didn't get at a lot of it, but I've documented a full year's worth of their inept, destructive, unfair, clueless reaction to the damage that Katrina wrought. And often my comments have sparked arguments about who's to blame with listeners on the other side of the aisle, or more accurately, more on the other side of the universe. They usually shield Bush from the brunt of the responsibility by holding up New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin and Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco as the real villains. And And as I mentioned earlier today, look, I carry no brief for former Republican Nagin, who comes off as an incompetent clown to me. I don't know what you think of him, but that's just the way, exactly the way he looks at me. He's unable to make up his mind or keep his foot out of his mouth. And that he was just reelected in the wake of Katrina makes less sense to me than Bush's reelection in the middle of the Iraq War, really. And Blanco's managed to, I suppose she's acquitted herself marginally better, but not exactly the next Democratic superstar, as I mentioned earlier. But it was Bush, if you'll remember, and I found a recording of this earlier today, but it was of such poor quality that I didn't want to play it for you. It was Bush who stood under the dramatic stage lightings in an otherwise blacked-out city on September the 15th, 2005, and ensured the nation that, and I quote, "When communities are rebuilt, they must be even better and stronger than before the storm. Within the Gulf region are some of the most beautiful and historic places in America. As all of us saw on television, there's also some deep, persistent poverty in this region as well. That poverty has roots in a historic history of racial discrimination, which cut off generations from the opportunity of America. We have a duty to confront this poverty with bold action, so let us restore all that we have cherished from yesterday, and let us rise above the legacy of inequality. When the streets are rebuilt, there should be many new businesses, including minority-owned businesses, along those streets. When the houses are rebuilt, more families should own, not rent, those houses. When the regional economy revives, local people should be prepared for the jobs being created." Well, Bush's bold action with respect to the Gulf Coast was the suspension of the Davis-Bacon Act, prevailing wage protections, and the naming of his chief political advisor, Karl Rove, to lead the Reconstruction effort. And to this day, nothing has been done to address the rampant poverty that was made worse by Katrina. And racism rages on in that area as before. Nothing has changed. Bush is right that more families should own homes, but those who rented before and lost everything are not finding it one bit easier to own a home this time around. Homeowners are being compensated for their losses, but not renters. And damn few homeowners at that. And the path is being made harder by the lack of living wage jobs and the skyrocketing rents in that area. There was a time not long ago when presidents were punished severely politically for breaking their promises. But not only is Bush not paying a political price, he's trying to reap the benefits that his policies produce. You know, rich or poor, black or white, everyone in New Orleans, with the possible exception of that idiot you saw the other day, Rocky Vaccarella. Jesus. He blames the government for a Republican Party that for years has tried to sour views on Washington. That's money in the bank. And with the slow pace of Reconstruction, especially the residential variety, in the areas most likely to vote Democratic, the state of Louisiana definitely moves into the solid red electoral column. Make no mistake about it. Sure, he's down a little bit in the polls, though he probably would be anyway due to Iraq. But that's a small price to pay for a lame duck, for a potential realignment shift in regional politics that's going to happen in Louisiana. No one, at least no one credible, expected that 12 months would be enough to repair and rebuild from Katrina. Nor is anyone blaming the administration for not having produced a miracle. But the sad truth is that this is simply not a priority for this administration. People are coming back to New Orleans, and they clearly want to reclaim their city, but it takes more money than it's been released, and it takes leadership this president simply does not possess nor recognize in other people. He doesn't have that ability. He sits idly by as the power company that serves New Orleans proper siphons profits into its holding company, while they're threatening to declare bankruptcy and leave their hardest-hit customers in the dark. Yet he was in Mississippi yesterday and in New Orleans today carrying the message that, quote, "after a slow start, we're keeping our promise," unquote. One only needs to look at the state of the Ninth Ward to see that, like everything else, this administration is simply not serious about governing. Gulf residents are paying an immediate price. But the rest of us, whether you know it or not, we've got a generational mortgage on the after